Welcome back to Central Standard. For the rest of the show, we're talking about baseball because what the heck? It seems like the Royals are clearing the bench kind of a lot, and the national media is giving them a pretty hard time about it. Meanwhile, here in town, it seems like the perception is a little bit different. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with KCUR's sports reporter Greg Eklund. Hi, Greg.
Good morning, Gina.
We've also got Lee Judge with us. He's here from the Kansas City Star. He's been on the show before as a political cartoonist, but he also writes a baseball column. Hi, Lee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So just in case any of our listeners aren't quite following what's been going on with the Royals and don't understand why this team is the subject of scrutiny, Greg, can you give us the recap?
One big brawl and a lot of tussles, let's shall we say.
What do you think, what would you say is the cause of these brawls and tussles?
Well,
there's debate about that. But
the main one that really stirred up the discussion was the series against the Oakland Athletics when Brett Lowry almost took out Royals shortstop Elcides Escobar with a potentially season-ending injury. As it resulted, he missed the rest of the games in the series, but the injury wasn't as serious as first thought. But that was when this idea of quote-unquote payback entered the minds of those who followed the game.
Is there a narrative about this coming from outside Kansas City that's different from what you hear from Royals fans or other people around town?
I think it's generally understood in the game that if something is going to happen where somebody is hurt or if somebody's hit by a pitch, that generally, although sometimes not in the same game, but generally there's going to be some payback in some form because a team wants to show that it doesn't want to back down.
So it seems like at least part of this, to me, seems like it has to do with a handful of unspoken rules in the culture of baseball. What do we need to understand, Lee, I'll turn to you for this, about an unspoken code of conduct in baseball?
Well, when Lowry did that slide on Escobar and took him out, that was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back because the Royals hitters were getting plunked by pitchers, and they were, I don't know, was it 13, 14 at that point? It was pretty high.
Yeah.
And I think there was a perception that the Royals were not responding, that they were letting their hitters get hit and they weren't doing anything about it. And when Lowry took out Escobar, I think the Royals just said, okay, we've had it. We're going to respond. And the next day he got hit when someone hit a home run and the score went 5-0 and the opportunity was there. Okay, it looks like we're not going to win this game. Now is the time we pay him back. And I think there is a culture that says you've got to even this up. And it's actually strategic because if the other team can come inside and hit your batters and you don't do anything about it, they'll just keep doing it. So a lot of it is protecting your players and saying we're not going to let you use that tactic without responding.
And Lee, you have a special kind of familiarity with this being hit by a pitch
unfortunately,
experience.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was dumb enough to say that a player, Wilson Betemeet, needed to stand in and get hit by a pitch because the bases were loaded and it potentially would have won the game. And so then I offered to get hit by the same pitch, and we set up a pitching machine.
Just to test it out for journalism?
Yeah, well, it was kind of, first of all, I just thought it was funny, which was stupid. And I just wanted to kind of put my money where my mouth was. I'd played amateur ball and I'd been hit plenty of times. Unfortunately, the pitching machine was a little off that day and it was supposed to come out at 81 and it came out at 92.
Ow.
And so I got smoked pretty good, which the players loved. They thought that was just the most awesome thing they were going to see all season.
One of the criticisms that I've read of the Royals has to do with their form of celebration, the team members' way of celebrating when good things happen out there on the field. And that seems kind of strange to me. In baseball, you've got screaming after dunks. In football, you've got end zone dances. But in baseball, am I correct in understanding that the players aren't supposed to celebrate until they've won the whole game?
I think it's something that goes back to the tradition of baseball. And the expression that I hear most often through the years is respect the game. And I think that over-celebratory...
That doesn't sound very fun.
It may not be as fun, but the game is so humbling that if you over-celebrate, the game will humble you in somehow, some way. It will come back to bite you.
So what are the Royals doing that's different, and when did it start?
I think a lot of it started in the postseason last year when the nation saw, when the Royals were making their run in the World Series, how enthusiastic this team and how enthusiastic the teammates are toward each other. So it was in the national spotlight, and I think it has continued on from there.
I think that's, to me, where the real change is the national spotlight. They were doing this when they weren't a very good team and nobody cared.
But when you say doing this, can we spell it out a little more? I mean, hand signals and...
Okay, yes. Signaling. Signaling is something where the base runner or the hitter gets a hit, he's on base, and he's got to turn around to the dugout and make a signal, and then everyone on the bench makes a signal back, and the coaches are all going, would you guys wind this up? We got to keep going. And they were doing that years ago. And nobody really cared because they weren't that good a team. Well, when they started winning and they're getting in the national spotlight, now everyone's seeing them celebrate and seeing all the stuff they're doing.
Baseball in America is becoming a lot more international. And I wonder if baseball culture in other countries has anything to do with this. I mean, is baseball culture, is this whole idea of not celebrating till the end of the game, is that international or is that just...
That's kind of white America. Latin American players have always been known for playing with a lot of flair, and I've asked why. And they say because if you're a Latin American kid and there's a scout there, you want him to notice you. So you do everything with a lot of style. And I think the Latin American players come in, and that's kind of their attitude of, hey, you do things with flair, you do things with style. And it's caught on, and now you're seeing pretty much everybody do it.
And I would say that bucks tradition a little bit too, because from some Latin American players that I've talked to who played in the 60s,
right,
such as Cuba emigrants, are not real happy with the style and this flair. They acknowledge that it's happening, and because of the traditions of the game, they're not real thrilled about the way the Latin players come out and play with this particular
flair. The younger
flair.
Ones.
The older ones are unhappy with the younger ones.
And that's very much a generational thing where, you know, the older generation, we had respect for the game. And I'm like, dude, I remember you with an afro and high stirrups. And now you're talking about how, you know, everyone needs to respect the game. So there is kind of a generational thing going on here.
Do you think that baseball is changing? Do you think that the Royals are heralding this change, or do you think that the Royals are just misbehaving and it'll be over sometime?
I don't think it's misbehaving at all. I think it's part of the change in baseball, and I think it's accepted here well because the team is winning, and it's a lot better accepted when the team is winning. If it was a situation where the team is not winning, then it would be regarded as hot-dogging. But in the case of the Royals over the last the first month of this season and over the course of the last few months of last season, they had something to celebrate about.
Joe Posnanski wrote an article called Breaking Bad, where he theorized that the Royals are a team with an identity, a sense of self that goes beyond just being a team that wants to win. It's kind of a scrappy, underestimated kid in the corner who's not going to take it anymore kind of identity. What do you make of that? Do you think this is about identity on some level?
To a certain degree. I think the clubhouse is very, very tight. It's a good clubhouse from what I can tell, and they feel like we're going to have each other's backs, and if someone gets attacked, we're going to attack back. Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, and I think they've been underdogs for a long time, and now they're understanding how good they are, and everyone is seeing that come out. They've got a lot of pride right now in how well they're doing.
What do you think about that, Greg?
I would agree with that. And I think if this team has taken on an identity, it's the identity of being a team that pulls for each other, that celebrates with enthusiasm and everything that other people outside Kansas City might not like, but people in Kansas City love.
KCUR's Frank Morris talked to some fans the other night, and here's what a fan has to say.
You have to send the message that, you know, we're not the same old Royals used to come in, kick around, take three games, go home happy. We're winning now, you know, we're a good team, and you better respect us.
This sounds so much like you can't take our lunch money anymore.
True. I mean, this team has earned the respect by what it did in the postseason last year. And I think to a certain extent, there's a little bit of baiting going on that, they want to show that they're not just a one-year wonder. They're a team that plans to be around a while, and the other older established teams that have been around for a while and with a winning tradition, they want to test that a little bit.
Do you think that the years of feeling irrelevant have contributed to just how big the emotions are around the Royals, both from the team's perspective and the fans?
I would say not so much from the players, because they weren't here. And when people throw that on them, like, oh, it's been this many years since you've been in the playoffs, they're going, what are you talking about? I just got here. And, you know, they don't have that same feeling that a lot of longtime fans do.
Is there anything about the style of play that the Royals are known for now that is especially frustrating other teams that might have something to do with these brawls?
Yes. The Royals last year became very much an athletic speed team, and people are very worried about the stolen base. People are taking extra bases. And yeah, it's frustrating for a lot of pitchers because they're having to alter the way they pitch to take that into account.
I would also say that a lot of teams are aware that the Royals are a team with a very deep bullpen, and to beat the Royals, you have to pretty much do it in the first five innings or so, or else you're going to be in trouble because of the strength of this team on the back end.
With this fighting, do you think it's gotten personal?
I don't think it's ever personal. I mean, you might see some guys shouting across the lines from dugout to dugout, but I think once they're off the field, I think they would probably, maybe from what I heard with what Chris Sale and Jeff Samardzija did going to the Royals clubhouse is a little bit different story. But I think when the game is over, I don't think there's anything personal about it.
Quickly, looking back at everything that's happened so far in 2015, do you think this is a game-changing year for baseball? And do you think the Royals have anything to do with that?
Yeah, I think the Royals are bringing speed back to the game. Since they got PEDs out of the game, you're seeing a lot less home runs, and people are relying a lot more on speed and athleticism, and I think the Royals are right in the front of that movement.
That's all the time we have for today's Central Standard. From the pedestrian experience to baseball fever, it's been a lot of fun this morning. Greg Eklund, thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And Lee Judge, nice to see you again. Great having you.
Thank you very much.
Steer clear of 92-mile-an-hour baseballs for me. To listen back to this morning's conversations, just go to kcur.org/centralstandard. They'll be available for download later today. Sign up for our podcast while you're there. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, Kansas is home to the largest barbed wire museum, a claim to fame that's being challenged by Texas. More on barbed wire and its surprisingly fascinating history tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. We had clips today from KCUR's Frank Morris. I'm Gina Kaufman. The Standard's been set. Stick around for Up to Date next.